Hi, welcome to MediatorPodcast.com, a podcast and video series about mediation, negotiation strategies, and collaboration. My name is Melissa Gregg, and I'm a valuation expert and divorce financial mediator in St. Louis, Missouri. Today, we're speaking with Leah Marie Mazder about her personal insights from her first and second divorce and how this journey helped her gain clarity and self-awareness. Leah is a certified divorce recovery coach in Buffalo, New York, and founder of Mindfully Ready. She works and specializes with working with high conflict clients around the country, but she helps her clients heal after divorce so they can create a healthy, happy, fulfilling next chapter for themselves and their kids. Welcome, Leah. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm excited to hang out with you.
So should we go by Leah Marie? Is that
you can call me Leah? Yeah.
Either way. Okay. So I actually want to tell everybody that I found you on TikTok, and you talk a lot about kind of divorce in a similar way that I do, which is a lot goes on in the court and a lot goes on financially, but there's a lot of emotions. Mm-hmm. And there's also kind of, you know, the process of self-discovery as you go through when a relationship kind of deteriorates or ends, because it doesn't have to be bad. It could just end.
Yep.
But maybe if we want to start getting into some of these insights, I think the easiest way to start is kind of take us back to the beginning of like what in the first part, like what sort of caused the first thing, you know, like we can't tell the whole story, but we can certainly. Did you identify some of the things that kind of broke down in the relationship that got you there?
Yeah, I can tell you. So I'll take you back a little ways. When I was 16 years old, I actually witnessed my mom have an asthma attack in our home and die. It was crazy. It was very, very traumatic. And within 5 years after she passed away, my dad died of pancreatic cancer, and I'm an only child. And between those two losses, I found myself in a relationship with a narcissist. It was horrible. It was extremely abusive. So by the time my dad died, I was a mess. I was so lost. I had no self-esteem, full of abandonment issues. I was just going through it. And I really didn't have guidance or support on how to cope or process anything that I had experienced. So I was essentially floating around the planet, just not knowing what to do. And so my coping mechanism became serial monogamy. I was hopping from relationship to relationship for years because I felt like those were the buoys that were keeping me afloat. That was how I could feel like I was a part of something and not feel so alone and isolated. And so when I met my first husband, we actually first met when I was 19 years old. He hired me at Blockbuster. Remember Blockbuster? But we ended up dating on and off. We broke up like 4 times before we even got married. That should have been a red flag, but I didn't even know what red flags were back then. And there was no engagement. There was no like proposal or engagement. We had a conversation one day about getting married. And then 8 weeks later we were, and we got through about 5 years. We had one daughter, but looking back so clearly, I can see that we really just weren't compatible. We did not make a good team. And one of the things that I've shared, and that was hard for me to really accept and come to terms with, was that I was never physically attracted to him. Mm-hmm. And I convinced myself that that was shitty of me. That was very shallow, and that it's what is inside that counts. It's who he is as a person. The outside doesn't matter. But it does. There was a lot missing from that relationship, not just that compatibility piece as far as being a team, but on all those levels, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, like we did not align. And so one of my kind of aha moments was I remember sitting on the couch watching TV and an eHarmony commercial came on. And I remember saying to myself, God, like, I wish I could do that. I wish I could sign up for eHarmony and like find my person. And I just knew that was kind of my like, oh man, I know that I'm not with the right person. And so I wound up getting a divorce and then doing all the wrong things after the first divorce.
So when you were going through, so I think that a lot of things that you say resonate with people because, you know, generationally, we've been encouraged to get married younger.
Yeah.
You know, we've been encouraged to almost become a person that is a worthy wife or, you know, like, and really, we were talking about this earlier. Like, I don't think people are training men to be like worthy husbands, but definitely we were being trained to kind of be this, you know, quiet and cook and be, and then kind of just be okay with whoever comes along and gives you attention and like, oh, well, they could marry you. Well, you know, they could provide for, and all of these things, were those the same things that you were going through? Because, you know, you didn't have any kind of the foundation of that immediate family. Mm-hmm. Were you kind of seeking that family, or how do you think totally. Your trauma, because a lot of it for self-awareness is kind of identifying your own trauma. Like,
yeah.
Were you able to start identifying like some of that, that you came into that relationship with?
I didn't start identifying what was going on with me until after my second divorce, honestly. Ooh. And that's why I wound up with a second divorce, you know, because I did all the wrong things. But that absolutely, I mean, we are primed to have that goal. You grow up, you graduate, you get a job, you get married. That's like everybody's framework. And even in movies and things that we are inundated with all the time, that's like the message that we were getting. And then you see all your friends doing it and you think, oh, I'm behind. Everyone's getting married. I got to find my... And so when I wasn't in a relationship, I felt like something was wrong with me. I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. So nobody wants me. And I felt like I needed to be in a relationship to almost prove to myself and to everyone else that I was lovable. Mm. So I unknowingly settled in a relationship because I just thought, well, this is a good person. So what else matters? Right. I mean, if he's a good person, that's all I can ask for. Right. And I had no idea what really goes into a successful marriage, a long-term relationship, and how to have a healthy relationship, because myself, I wasn't in a healthy place.
Yeah. Well, and I think that a lot of times when people kind of start to get divorced, you know, they start to do, well, first of all, it's a process to get divorced. So you might separate, right? Mm-hmm. But still be in the divorce process. How long did it take for you guys to kind of go through that process, and how did you cope? Because a lot of people kind of start dating when they're still in the process of getting divorced. You know, like, it's stressful and emotional. So like having a support system is, you know, what people need, you know? Yes. So what were some of the things that you did when you were in that first divorce?
The first divorce, I did all the stuff you're not supposed to do. I did not take the time to self-reflect or heal or build my self-esteem. I immediately hopped into another relationship with someone who I was very physically attracted to. Because at that point, I felt like, well, I haven't had this in a long time. So right now, that's priority one. That's my goal. And so I was in a relationship right away, unhealthy relationship that lasted about 2 years. But to me at that time, that was my place of solace almost. I used that relationship to get out of the shit show that was my divorce. It's painful and it's stressful and it's difficult. And financially, you're worried. I mean, there's so much going on that having that relationship was almost something that soothed me, and it was an escape from everything that I was going through. And that's really a really common reason to hop into a relationship really quickly, but it's not a good way to start a relationship. I mean, you're not starting that. It's not a strong foundation to build a healthy relationship on. So again, I was in a relationship for the wrong reasons, still not knowing who I am, what I want, self-reflecting. So it lasted about 2 years. And I had no self-esteem after that. And again, was back to all of that inner critic, negative self-talk. So what do I do? Well, I go right back on the dating apps because that was my habit. And I married the first person I went on a date with. I found him on an app. We dated for a few months. He moved in. And then like a year later, we were married. And a couple years into that, that was my real aha moment. I will never forget. I was in my bedroom. I fell to my knees crying because I knew what I had done. And I knew that I had to go through this all over again because I didn't do anything the right way. And I knew I had to get divorced again. And I was so pissed at myself. And I was so embarrassed. You know, oh my God, what are people going to think? What does this mean? Here I am 36. I'm getting divorced twice. I'm such a mess. All that negative self-talk. But then that was really the catalyst for something beautiful for me, because that was when I really started my own healing journey. And I started cultivating self-awareness and figuring out why I made the choices I made and how I got to where I was, and empowered myself to make different choices that served me moving forward. And that has really never ended. And that's a journey that really continues forever. And I'm still on it, but I'm in such a healthy place now because of all the work that I did after that second divorce.
Well, and I want to talk about some of the similarities between the patterns that you see, but before we get back, just to kind of hone in on something that you said, I think a lot of people, like I have also been handling high net worth divorces for like 20 years. And I think that part of, you know, this dynamic is we become this person to get married to a person that has potential, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're smart, they're going to college, they're going to be a doctor, they're going to be a lawyer, they're going to provide for us and all of this thing. And so we ignore the need for passion or for like the thrill, because we've sort of been like, no, get the calm life with the two dogs or the dog, whatever it is, you know, the picket fence kind of concept. But when you look at it, a lot of people who are getting divorced, even from 5, 10, 15, 20 year marriages, didn't have that passion for the majority of the time. And then the person actually becomes just horrible to live with or something, like they can't even be a good roommate, right?
Yeah.
But talk a little bit about how important that is in figuring that out for you, like, because that is attached to like your passion for yourself and your love for yourself. But the passion is a real thing. So a lot of times they come off of this first divorce and they are just like, I'm going to go hang out with the hottest people, the most amazing, you know, like thrill seekers and stuff like that. And is that almost the other extreme that might not also be where, you know?
Yeah. Because there's such a balance. It does really come down to knowing yourself and understanding what you need, what you want in a relationship, but what you need in a relationship. Like, what are your standards? What are your deal breakers? And I didn't know those things before getting into those relationships. I had no idea. I was just looking for someone who liked me and who felt like taking me on wasn't a burden. That's really how I felt. And, but it is so important because there's so many levels. I mean, you really have to think about that. This isn't like you just fall in love and then this is the person you should be with for the rest of your life. Love is just like a very small percentage of how to make that work. There's so many other layers to it because you're becoming a team. You have to be with somebody who shares common goals. You can have different interests, but you have to have enough in common and see the world in a similar perspective in order for you to reach these goals together. And you can get very specific. I mean, you want to be asking questions like, what is your parenting style? What is your love language? What is your debt to income ratio? What's your credit score? Who do you vote for in your political parties? How do you spend your money? How do you save your money? How do you invest your money? All of these little things that we don't talk about or that we're afraid or embarrassed to talk about, we don't want to offend people, that shit becomes the big things that wind up destroying relationships because you're not agreeing on things, the day-to-day stuff or the things, the big things that end up coming in and happening. If you guys can't be on the same page, you're up against a wall. What are you going to do? Then you're married to this person who's supposed to be your teammate, but there's conflict because you aren't seeing things the same way. But there are also ways to, and I'm not saying in a relationship there should never be disagreements, but there's also different ways to navigate those disagreements. I mean, one thing I've learned now, and I'm now in the healthiest relationship I've ever been because I'm the healthiest I've ever been, but we disagree well. We don't, there's no door slamming. There's no name calling. There's no throwing shit. There's no silent treatment. We can just talk about it. We can have a disagreement and then communicate about it and then move forward. And we respect each other's feelings and thoughts. And it's just so much easier than I've ever experienced in previous relationships where you're feeling like you're trying to fit that, you know, square peg into a round hole.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that some of this comes down to self-worth, self-love, self-respect. I know that very recently, you know, my husband and I had a conversation with my husband. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to respect every decision, every thought that you have about your own body, your own everything as just the word, right? Like it just is. I'm not going to say, oh, do you really think you should do that? Or, oh, do you, because you were talking about some of that self-negative talk that comes into play. And it's sort of like, that is some of the talk that a lot of us had when we were younger of like, you're not good enough. And if somebody loves you, you should just take it because they may never, you might not be loved.
And you more also, chances will I get? I'm only getting older.
But you also get that in abusive relationships, even if, it, you know, like they, somebody will continue to tell you at the end of the relationship, like, you're unlovable. No one's going to do this. Da, da, da.
Yes.
And you come out of those relationships with this, like, no one's going to love. And you, it's not like a joke. Like you really have taken that. How did your two divorces affect your self-worth or your view of yourself and impact, you know, like you can tell me at any transition, but maybe the first to the second or whatever, but it seems like there had to be a trajectory where you said, hey, I'm good enough for this. I now expect better.
Yeah. Right?
But how did you progress through that process?
Yeah. After my divorces, I definitely had low self-esteem. I was dealing with anxiety and depression and things that I didn't even realize I was going through until after, and I could look back more objectively. But really the shift for me, it was after my second divorce where I started getting into mindfulness and meditation practice. That changed my whole life because that taught me how to cultivate self-awareness and how to become the observer of my thoughts. Because when your thoughts are running rampant and then it's causing these emotions in your body that are uncomfortable or that you deem as negative, you're essentially your brain is like just taking you through a ride. It's like an emotional roller coaster. But what I didn't realize was that I actually had control of that. I could choose my own thoughts. I can decide how I felt about myself. I can use things like affirmations as tools to reprogram my subconscious so that I felt differently about myself. And that's what I started doing. I intentionally would choose different thoughts that in turn gave me different feelings as a result. So it takes practice and consistency, but it's absolutely possible. I love affirmations. I still use them every day when I catch myself kind of thinking something negative or anticipating a negative outcome or something like that. I catch myself because I've cultivated that self-awareness and now I'm aware of what's going on in my brain. And then I can on purpose choose a different thought. And then that gives you different results. And so that's the best tool that helped me. And I talk about this with my clients all the time because most people are walking around on autopilot. 95% of what we do is controlled by our subconscious. So we're not even, we don't even realize. It's just all of these patterns and programs and habits and behaviors that we have that we don't think about or question to ask ourselves, where did this come from? When did this start? Is this something that I even believe anymore? So if you're feeling like shit about yourself, if you're having those thoughts of, I'm not good enough, no one's going to want me, I'm only getting older, then it's going to keep you feeling like shit. So when you can acknowledge that that's actually the conversation you're having with yourself about yourself, you can decide to say, I am good enough. I am worthy. I am whole. I am deserving. Whatever affirmations you want to use, the more you speak those to yourself on purpose, that becomes your new belief. And then it changes how you feel. And then it changes how you show up in the world, which gives you completely different results in your life.
Well, and I think that one aspect of becoming more self-aware or doing meditation is you have to be aware of your own participation in the relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that at the end, when people are getting divorced, especially if you're in the divorce, right? Mm-hmm. Everything that's going bad is their fault.
Totally. Yes.
And so you get in that and then you're like, and then you're seeking out things that are bad to be like, see, it's you're the one. And then when I sit back and I, and of course I have a little bit different coaching style, which is not always, but it's just the truth. Like, okay, you didn't have access to those accounts. You didn't know where the accounts were. You didn't know how to pay bills, but yes. Guess what? You can. And you have to take accountability. But if you take accountability of your own actions, it then becomes apparent that you might also be part of the problem. And
yes,
you can only
that's hard. That's yeah. hard to look at. It's like that shadow work. Totally. That self-reflection piece is necessary if you really want to heal and empower yourself. Because if you don't do that, you're going to make the same mistakes over and over and over. You're just going to, it's going to be like Groundhog Day. When you can look back and you can really be honest with yourself and say, what role did I play in this? Where was I mentally and emotionally when I started this relationship? What red flags did I miss or ignore? What boundaries were I not setting? What role did I play? Not how is this my fault, but what could I have done differently? Or what do I know now that I didn't know before? When you do that, that will give you a completely different perspective of what kind of choices to make moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that, you know, it's sort of like, you don't need to say whose fault it is, but it's like, what do I no longer want to do going forward that was obviously not productive in this situation that really is a me thing, right? It's
yeah.
my personality or my issue that somebody responded to.
Yeah. Or like, did I have unreasonable expectations? Some people get into a relationship thinking that, well, this person is supposed to make me happy.
Yeah.
And that's just not true. You are always responsible for your own happiness. And a relationship is somebody adding value to your life. You have to make sure that you are whole and happy and fulfilled all by yourself first before you add a relationship into your life.
Right. And I think that is very hard for people to understand or comprehend when they're in the mix. And they're sort of like, you know what? Thanks. I appreciate that. Great advice, you jerk, you know, but let's talk a little bit about the stigma of the second divorce, because I'm telling you, I do a lot of divorce and people are divorced once, two, three. It's like, I think we almost have to get away from giving a care about let's look at what the blessing or the lesson was mm-hmm. of, you know, you obviously had already gotten married and divorced. So Miss Leah, why did you have to get divorced a second time? Mm-hmm. Like, what did you learn? What made it happen this time?
So what I learned was you shouldn't rush into relationships, because I didn't take the time to really not only get to know myself, which was problem number one, but really get to know the person that I was marrying. And there was a lot of dishonesty that I didn't catch until it was too late and we were too deep. And so if I would have slowed down and not been in that mindset of lack, I was coming from lack, not feeling good enough, worrying about my finances, afraid I'd be alone forever. So when I found this person that was nice and would take me on, I felt like, well, how many more chances am I going to get? And so we rushed into things and it didn't give me enough time. And so as the years progressed, things would come up in our relationship where there would be, he'd be lying about things, and he went through 7 different jobs in like the 2 years that we were together. And there was just a lot of things that we ended up not agreeing on. And again, it's like, we didn't make a good team. And this person showed up on their best behavior in the beginning of the relationship. They almost created this person that didn't exist. And I know that this happens a lot with narcissists, and he is not a narcissist, but he's someone who I think just himself, he just wanted to be in a relationship badly. He didn't like being alone. And so he put on this facade, and I bought it because I was desperate. And so then in our relationship, as we started just living life and things started happening, we disagreed constantly. We were always screaming at each other. We were never on the same page. And it just became something that I really lost respect really quickly because of the choices that he would make and the lies that I was being told. And I feel like once that's gone, trust and respect, you're fucked. And that's really, really hard to get back. Trust, respect, communication. I mean, those are such pillars in a relationship. And so I got to a point where I was like, I'm not going to do this for the rest of my life. There's no way. Number one, it's not healthy. Number two, this is not an example that I want to set for my daughter of what a relationship looks like. And so I decided to leave, even though I knew that it wasn't going to look great on the outside and that I was going to probably get a lot of judgment for it. But I just refused to stay in a relationship that I knew wasn't healthy. And so when I left, I knew that I needed to figure out why I kept finding myself in that position so that I could do things differently moving forward.
Yeah. And I think I see a lot of divorces where, you know, men may be wanting somebody in that role, right? Somebody to be the person that they can have relationship with, somebody that they can have clean their house and cook for them and do all these things. Whereas women want a little bit different stuff. Now, when you start to introduce money and somebody kind of having control over the money and then wants you to do things their way and like you perform as their companion kind of thing, I think that I've seen some of that happen. And typically it's women are just in a people pleasing type of like, okay, I want to be the best wife. I want to be the this, I want to be the that. I don't ask questions. I don't know where the money comes from, you know, and some of that is based on just not being upfront with our own needs, our own desires, our own, you know, minimum, if you will. So if we talk about some of this, like, how do you think some of these divorces affected how, you know, because so now you have the first divorce and the second divorce, mm-hmm. but did you feel like you had really healed before the second one? Or did a lot of your healing have to come in after those divorces? Like, what kind of what were some of the changes even that you made about how you saw relationships going forward?
I did no healing or self-reflection after my first divorce, which is why I hopped right into another relationship. And then from there, hopped right into another one. So after the second divorce, I started doing all the things, reading books, listening to podcasts, journaling, meditating. When I was in the process of divorcing my second husband, I had to stay in the marital home for about 6 months before I moved out because I had to save money so that I could afford to leave. And so I spent a lot of time in my room by myself. And then on the weekends when he was home, I would just leave. I would go somewhere else so that I could just reflect and process. And then when I had gotten into a new space to live, I lived there alone for about 2 years. And even though I still dated, I would still go out, like when my daughter wasn't home or when she was gone, you know, with her dad for the summer, I would still date, but it was so different than anything that I had experienced before because my mindset was different. When I was showing up on dates now, it was almost like I was just doing it for fun. And it was like, are you what I'm looking for? Are you good enough for me? Are you going to add value to my life? That was never where I was at. Before that, I would show up on dates like, am I good enough for you? Are they going to like me? Am I wearing the right thing? Am I saying the right thing? Am I going to do the right things? And that's not a good place to be when you're trying to find your ideal partner. So when I started getting into the dating world after that divorce, all of that work that I was doing internally was showing up in mindset shifts. I was able to just have a completely different perspective. And I knew that I was never going to settle because I knew what happened when I did. When I settled in relationships, the result I was getting was shitty relationships and divorce. And I knew I didn't want to do that again. So I knew I had to do that work to figure out who I was, to like myself, to accept myself, to forgive myself for all the mistakes I made and all the bad choices that I made, to try to find the silver linings in everything that I had gone through and to figure out how those can benefit me moving forward, to find the wisdom in all of the shit that I had experienced so that I can empower myself moving forward. Doing all that work helped me get to know myself and love myself. And that in turn had me showing up differently on dates because if they weren't what I was looking for, it didn't matter. It didn't matter anymore if shit didn't work out. I could show up on dates and if they didn't like me or I got ghosted or it didn't work out, it was like, whatever. Like, I'm fine. I don't need you. I don't need a relationship to be happy anymore. I could just make myself happy. And so if I find somebody that adds value to my life and that I feel like makes a good partner for me, great, bonus. But if I don't, I'm still okay.
Yeah. Well, and maybe this plays into it because I think that sometimes people are, you know, and we maybe haven't talked too much about this, but like codependency or independence or dependent on somebody, like these are the variations that you have when you're not autonomous, right? When I'm not just making the best decisions for myself, I'm either codependent, I'm dependent, or I'm hyper independent, which are all kind of trauma responses in some capacity. How did that play? Because I love what you're saying. I think what happens with people is when they get divorced, it's such a difficult process. They're like, I'm never going to do it again unless it's great, right? Yeah. And so they do kind of sit back and be like, nope, I'm not just taking anything this time. Like it's got to be good.
Yeah, you learn your lesson. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that or like how you see it play into some of these relationships.
Yeah. I mean, codependency was definitely something that I was dealing with. And it goes back to that self-reflection piece, because if you don't understand your intention, if you don't understand why you're making the choices you're making or why you want the things you think you want, then you're almost doing it blindly. So when you take a step back and if you think you have this goal or you think you want to date this person, take a step back and really ask yourself, why? What is my intention here? Do I feel like if I'm not in a relationship, I feel like I'm not good enough? Or do I have to prove to myself that I'm worthy by finding somebody who will love me and accept me? Am I relying on this person for happiness? Am I relying on this person to be taken care of financially, emotionally, physically, or otherwise? And I think that that's so important because when you know how to meet your own needs and identify your own needs, I guess, first identify and then be able to meet your own needs, you are in such a powerful place because then you know that you're choosing partners not out of need or lack or like filling a void that you have within yourself. You're just choosing partners based on whether or not you honestly think that you make a good team or if they're adding value to your life. And that was something that I was never doing before. So I was choosing these partners to fill voids. I was choosing them because I wanted to feel a part of something or taken care of or lovable. And it's not going to get you great results when you do that. So when you can, and it's scary. It is scary to, if you've never really been on your own, that's hard. It's hard to do that. And, but when you push yourself outside of that comfort zone and you figure out how to support yourself financially and mentally and emotionally, and really just create a life that feels good and find fulfillment and get hobbies and creative outlets and just do things for yourself, that puts you in such a great place to find a relationship if you want one, because then you do know your standards, you do have your deal breakers, and you're not going to settle for someone because of fear.
Well, and I think that you're hitting on a couple areas that are pretty impactful, which is, you know, if you want a different result, you're going to have to shift the patterns that you have created about who you are, how you respond in a relationship, you know, and I think that you have given a ton of different perspectives of like how you shift your perspective for the relationship. But what were the internal patterns? Like, what were the real like things that you had to break? You know, because when it comes down to it, any relationship issue, friendship, family, partner, it is probably unhealed trauma in your own life that you're projecting on somebody else, mm-hmm. right? So how do we change ourselves? And what are some of the things that you found helpful? Not just the modalities, but like you know, what did you have to change about how you went about relationshiping mm-hmm. to be healthier?
I had to work on my own insecurities big time. I mean, I was struggling with deep abandonment issues from the loss of my parents and from being in an abusive relationship. And I didn't even know that that's what it was until I started self-reflecting. And I had to figure out how to start speaking to myself differently. I mean, that it's so huge, because if I look back to how I was talking to myself, it was awful. I was always comparing myself to others. I was always feeling insecure in different aspects of my life. Like I wasn't good enough or smart enough, or feeling like unless somebody liked me, you know, in a relationship, that there was something wrong with me. Those were really like the things that was going on in my brain. Was like, if someone doesn't like me, it means there's something wrong with me. So when I started doing that mindfulness and meditation and getting a better grip on what was actually going on in my brain, that's what helped me pay closer attention to the conversations I was having with myself. And once I started doing that, it changed how I felt about myself, because anytime I would catch a thought like, you're not good enough, or you don't deserve it, or something wrong with you, I would intentionally start choosing different dialogue that made me feel differently about myself. So it was really just changing my inner dialogue, which helped me build my self-esteem. And also stepping outside of my comfort zone and challenging myself to do things that built my confidence. Like one of the things that I did after my second, well, really it was as my marriage was kind of on its way out, my second marriage, I decided I wanted to join a band. I was going to join a classic rock cover band because I had loved to sing my whole life, but I was kind of like a closeted singer. Like I didn't perform in front of anybody. I was too insecure. I was too embarrassed. But after that second divorce, when I, you know, I started kind of doing that inner work, I was like, fuck it. New chapter, new me, right? I'm going for it. And so I was looking online and I found a local band that was looking for a lead vocalist, and I signed up for the audition. And then the whole way there was like, it was like a 45 minute drive. I was listening to this confidence hypnosis app to try to psych myself up because this was so outside of my comfort zone. I listened to that the whole way. I got there. I was shaking. I was sweating profusely. But I remember telling myself, even if this doesn't work out, I am so fucking proud of myself just for showing up, because this is like way, way outside of anything I would normally do. So I'm just proud of myself that I'm doing something that I wouldn't normally do, and that I'm gonna be proud of myself no matter what happens. So I went to the audition, I gave it my all, and it wasn't great. I mean, looking back, I was too nervous. I had no breath control, but I actually got the part. I ended up getting the part, and then there I was. I was lead vocalist for a classic rock cover band, and it was awesome. I had so much fun. It was something that was just for me. I was passionate about it. I was excited. I was looking forward to it. And then it also opened up opportunities to meet like-minded people. I was meeting more people that way. And even to this day, I'm still in a band. It's a different band, but I still sing in a classic rock cover band. And it's something that I love so much. And I think that's something that's so important, is when you're in that phase of finding your new identity and coming out of a divorce and figuring out who you are going to have to do things that make you uncomfortable a lot. You're going to have to set boundaries that make you uncomfortable. You're going to have to maybe go out to eat by yourself and get comfortable. You're going to have to show up at holidays alone. You're going to have to find new hobbies and creative outlets that are just for you, because that's going to help you figure out who you are, find fulfillment, build your self-confidence. So when you do those things, when you take that action and do things that are outside of your comfort zone, that's honestly where the magic happens. And that's an example of what really helped me start just building my self-esteem and building my confidence, was I did the thing that scared the shit out of me and I survived. And right. So then it was like, oh, well, if I can do that, well, I could do this. And if I could do that, well, then I could do this.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to a little conversation that even we were having earlier, which is, you know, part of it is showing up differently, you know, and when you go through a divorce and you start to shift friends, shift people that you hung out with, you know, because any of it was really for you, right? And what we were talking about earlier internally is that you might have to show up in a different room. Like, you might be continuing to show up in a room where they're like, ew, you're horrible. Like, stop going into that room. Go to the places where people are like, you're amazing. This is fabulous. You're a great singer. You're like, oh, thank you. I am. But it part of it is this self-awareness. But part of it is also, I don't know if we ever really cultivated what we love as opposed to what can I love to make me likable, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I started, and I know you talk a lot about frequency and vibration and mm-hmm. kind of cultivating your self-power, if you will, and discovering that and building it, when you go into that, you don't know what you like, right? Because you're like, well, I've just liked what other people around me did. So it means experimenting. Totally. It means going into other places. So it's even bigger than that. It's being it, because there's one thing I'll ask you before we go into this, but do you know what vibration or what emotion or energy is higher than love from a frequency standpoint?
Gratitude?
Mm-mm. Authenticity.
Oh, authenticity. Yeah.
So the more you authentically show up like who you are, mm-hmm. the more you will vibrate higher and bring those people who like those things, right? Yeah. I love to say, well, if you like musicals, but no one else did, no one's going to go, well, go with people that like musicals. Go find a group that helps you. So what other ways, you know, being authentic can create a different vibration, being love, being gratitude, but also what are some of the other ways that you think, you know, you can start to cultivate self-awareness? Because they don't have to be big, and you are in control of these things, but you have to do them regularly, right?
Yes. Journaling is another really great tool. I don't know if anyone listening has been in therapy, but your therapist has probably told you this too. I've been in therapy many times in my life and they're always telling me to journal because that does help cultivate self-awareness. A lot of times when you have that shit floating around in your head, it's harder to make sense of. So yeah. When you sit down and really think about it and get it out and you see it on paper, you can kind of put those puzzle pieces together or find patterns or track your progress. And so that's a great way to cultivate self-awareness. But you're so right with that energy piece. I mean, you are the guardian of your own energy. You have to pay attention to how you feel. Let your feelings kind of be your compass. And sometimes after a divorce, being your authentic self does mean letting go of relationships that maybe you've had a long time, but you just felt obligated to maintain them because, well, I've known them for so long. And so I guess this is just a relationship I need to stay in. But that is important when you're trying to figure out who you are and you're doing things that really are in alignment, meaning it's something that you're naturally drawn to. It's something that you have this organic kind of, you want to explore something, you're interested in something because everyone's different. Everyone has different interests. Maybe I love to sing, but somebody else really wants to learn how to horseback ride, or there's somebody who really loves to knit or do photography or origami or whatever. There, if you have that inclination, if you have that desire or interest in something, that's in you for a reason. And so when you follow those things, it's opening up new doors for you. And then you are being more authentically yourself. You're finding things that are in alignment and you're opening up that opportunity to meet like-minded people. And so it's, again, it's yourself taking that uncomfortable action, trying to find yourself. And then that's how you can cultivate new relationships. And so part of that being uncomfortable sometimes is letting go of relationships that aren't serving you anymore. And one of the things that I tell my clients is when they're talking about relationships that they're struggling with is you have to ask yourself, this is a really simple way to do this, is ask yourself, are they an anchor or a balloon? Are they raising me? Are they lifting me up? Are they helping me rise? Are they helping me grow? Are they empowering me? Are they supporting me? Are they accepting of who I am? Or are they holding me down? Are they keeping me back? Are they dragging down my energy? Are they, you know, energy vampires? Really be mindful of what kind of relationship you have with people and then make the choice to protect your own energy and not have relationships with people who are more anchors than balloons.
Well, and I think that in general, as you see divorce as a change, and a lot of people don't like the change, you can rewrite the narrative. You can say, I'm in a better place now than I ever was. And it could be different and not great, but it's in it better, you know, it's going to be better. But then also to be mindful about what you consume in it, what you listen to, what you watch, what you eat, you know, all of that plays into either escalating the emotions or de-escalating the emotions.
Yes. But especially scrolling on social media, because that's a slippery slope. Everyone has their perfect, you know, their perfect lives, all of their little snippets on the internet. But just remember that a lot of that's not real. And so if you find, again, tune into your energy. So if you find when you get off social media, you feel worse, you feel like shit because you're just comparing yourself to people, then that's something that you need to do less of, or unfollow the people that make you feel like that and follow people who empower you and motivate you and inspire you. And just remember that you never know what's going on behind closed doors. You'd be really surprised how many people I work with whose closest friends and family had no idea that they were on the precipice of divorce. They all thought that they were great and everything was fine and dandy. Oh, you guys just got back from that vacation. I just saw all those pictures and what happened, right? So maybe what we see on social looks like everyone is puppies and rainbows, but you really don't know what's going on. So be really careful also about who you're comparing yourself to.
Yeah. And I think that people, you know, like there's an artist that I've been listening to since you brought up music, you maybe like music a little bit, but there is an artist called Saint Finnegan.
Okay.
And he creates like music that has like affirmations, but it's really good music.
Yeah.
And then the underlying things that are being said are just things that would maybe help change your thoughts, if you're, because then you start singing the words, but it's really like these powerful affirmations. And I think that people don't understand that energy travels when you push it, when you put something into it, right? So if you put it into writing and you write it down, if you talk to somebody, oh, I have a great idea, mm-hmm. you know, oh, I want to do better. I want to be healthier. We'll talk about being healthier. And then people will, oh, I want to be healthier too. Let's go walk. Let's go, you know, like you'll start to find it. But what I find in divorce is that people, as they go through it, they're like, this is horrible and awful, and I'm going to help people when I get out of here. So maybe that's a good entree to like, how did you kind of go through this process? Like, were you always a divorce coach? Were you always, you know, helping people?
Yeah. I always knew I wanted to help people. After I had gone through all of the trauma I did in my life, I knew that I mean, I was doing that anyway with coworkers and with friends. It just always made me feel good to try to help other people see things in a different perspective or give them some kind of tool. And so after my second divorce, I had to get a job that I hated because I needed something that paid the bills. So I was working full time. Lockdown happened. So I was homeschooling my kid. I was working full time. I was doing all the cooking, all the cleaning, taking care of the cats, doing all of the things. And I was in this job that I really wasn't passionate about, and it didn't feel like it was in alignment. And so that's when I kind of came into life coaching is really what my first step was. The more I learned about it, the more I was just like, oh my God, I was born to do this. I literally, my life unfolded in order for me to start doing this with people. And when you start a coaching business, you have to decide who you want to help, because I couldn't just show up and go, I'm a life coach. I can help everybody do everything, you know? So I had to think about, well, what do I know a lot about? What have I experienced a lot in my life? What do I know that I could share with people that can help them and change their lives and give them tools and give them new perspectives? And it was divorce. It was because I had gone through it twice, and I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be a mom to go through it. I know the internal struggle. I know the fears and the insecurities, and I had a lot of resources at that point too. And so that's when I decided that that's who I wanted to help. And it's completely changed my life. And that's really what I did, is I took everything I had gone through and I made it into something good. And I love stories like that. Like, a lot of the people that inspire me, who I see, that is what they did. Whether you're talking about the big, where Oprah, Tony Robbins, you know, Mel Robbins, I mean, any of those people, if you ask them to tell you your story, it's similar. They had gone through some shit that they could have either decided they were a victim of, or they decided to take control of their own lives, and they made changes, and then they took what they learned and what they know, and now they give that to other people to empower others. And so no matter what you're going through, you do have the power to do that. You know, for those of you listening, whatever it is, you can find silver linings. You can find the wisdom in it. You can figure out how this is actually beneficial to you. And I know that sometimes that's really hard. And when you're in the middle of the shitstorm, it seems impossible. But challenge yourself to do that, to find any silver linings. And you can use that to propel you into your next chapter, and you can use it to help other people. And when you do that, I feel like that is just, it's like epic. You know, when you can take your pain and transform it into a way to help others, I don't know what is more gratifying than that.
Yeah. I say it is, everything that happens, I say, what is the blessing?
Yeah.
Like, I stubbed my toe. What is the blessing? Right. Oh, I had dropped my earring and now I picked it up and I didn't lose that diamond, you know, or, oh, I'm stuck in traffic. Well, what is the blessing? Well, maybe I avoided something. So when you can start to look, and I think that's pretty heavy into healing and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. If literally on a daily basis, the things that are considered to be negative, you're literally like, well, what's the blessing?
Yes.
I just spilled my entire food on the ground. Yeah. What's the blessing?
That reminds me. So there's this book that I read. It's called A Happy Pocket Full of Money. It's a wonderful book. Okay. And it reminds me of this little excerpt in there where he's talking about you have to be careful of what you're labeling good and bad. Because there's the story of this farmer whose horse ran away. And the neighbor comes over and says, "Oh, I'm so sorry, your horse ran away. That's bad news." And the farmer said, "Well, who's to say what's good or bad?" So then a couple of days later, his horse came back and the horse brought all of his friends. So then he had like 20 horses. And so then the neighbor came over and said, "Oh, congratulations for your good fortune." And the farmer said, "Well, who's to say what's good or bad?" Then the farmer's son tries to ride one of the wild horses and falls off and breaks his leg. So then the neighbor says, "I'm so sorry for what happened to your son's leg." And he says, "Well, who's to say what's good or bad?" A couple of days later, the military comes to recruit his son to go off to war, but he didn't go because he had a broken leg. And so that's just an example of how maybe you think something's bad, but in the bigger scheme of things, the universe has got some plans. And so you have to have that trust that even though it seems bad or uncomfortable, who's to say it's not actually leading you in the direction where you really want to go?
Mm-hmm. And that what you just said was key. You have to have the trust. Mm-hmm. And if your trust has been broken by all of the relationships that you have ever been in, either family by leaving or friends or a loved one, you know, like a serious relationship, you are still in control of trusting yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that that is what it is, the harder thing. It is, and then to trust yourself enough to say, you know what, that's what is best for me. That's what I deserve. And I am going to create that or attract it. And that's really what kind of, and you're trying to do with your company, Mindfully Ready. And let me just say one thing before we, everybody wants to come in divorce and they're like, "Well, I'm hiring attorneys and I'm hiring experts." And, you know, I always get involved and everybody gets involved. And then I bring in like therapists, accountants, yeah, and all of these people. And they're like, "Why do I need all of these people?" And I was like, because everybody has a role in this process. And if you allow everybody to stay in their role, your lawyer fights your fight, your expert fights the money, your psychologist or your therapist kind of helps you emotionally. But the coach, although everybody wants to think it's like this fluffy thing, there is so much that goes on in the divorce that you could be paying out the wazoo to ask the wrong person. It's the, yeah, right question. It's just the wrong person. Whereas when you're a coach and you understand the process, you're kind of the sand between the pebbles, right? You're like catching all of those questions that really don't have a good legal or financial or something.
Yeah.
But they're like the important people question, like they're about their lives. So
yeah,
tell us how you kind of operate, how you support people and what they would look to you for in this process.
Yeah. So I help with the mental and emotional side of things. There's like a business bucket with divorce. And then there's the mental and emotional shit. Everything that comes up, guilt, shame, feelings of failure, low self-esteem, anger, resentment. How are you, what are you doing about that stuff? How are you getting yourself to feel better? How are you navigating now co-parenting with somebody that you can't stand to be around? How do you get yourself to a place where you feel confident and you feel good about who you are? So these are the things that I help people dive into so that they can be really their best selves. And I know that sounds cliche, but you have to think about it. If you're struggling and if you know that you're not in a good place, your kids are getting that version of you. Mm-hmm. That so the more work and self-care you put into yourself, then your kids are getting the best of you, not what's left of you. Mm-hmm. And so I help, there's all kinds of things. I mean, there's digital resources. I have an online course that's amazing. That's specifically to help you build your self-esteem and know your worth again. There's group coaching, private coaching. There's a monthly membership where you can get training every single week on different topics like co-parenting, setting boundaries, parental alienation, negative self-talk. But just get the support you need. Whatever you're going through, everyone has blind spots, everyone, because when you're in it, it's really hard to see things objectively. And so when you can get the support, even if it's joining a free support group, sometimes just gaining that fresh perspective completely changes the way you feel and the choices that you make, which then gives you different results.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that in the divorce process, you have to start to be your own advocate. And if you, I'm just telling you, like, I am heavy into litigation, and the litigation we do, like when we go to trial, it's 3, 4, 5, 7 day trials, right? It's very complex stuff. But during this process, all of the clients always have issues, and they'll be like, oh, attorney, oh, expert, I'm just very frustrated right now. And do you know what everybody's going to say? We do not care. We right. do care, but you're not paying us to care about that. And they will say that to you. They're like, do you want to pay $350, $500 an hour to ask me not legal questions or not financial questions?
Yeah.
And you know, and they will say, go talk to your therapist about this. Go. And what I will say also is, great if your therapist understands divorce. Absolutely great. But for divorce, don't hire an accountant, don't hire anybody who doesn't understand that space, because it is the twilight zone and it's got its own rules.
Yes.
And if you don't play by the rules, you're going to get caught. And if you think anybody's going to emotionally hold you through that process, that is incorrect. So in my mind, even if you are hiring a coach and you are paying them, that is for the advice for that specific thing. Like, it comes in and kind of helps that piece, or that's your frame of reference to help understand what the other people are doing, right? Sometimes it's like, I don't know what they're all doing. And somebody else would be like, oh, well, oh, that's just a simple hearing. No big yeah. deal. Don't worry about it. But they don't know. So it ramps up anxiety. It ramps up depression. It ramps up all of these things. So not only working on yourself, but also hiring the right team.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, unless you have exponential wealth, a divorce is going from a 2-member household to a 1-member household in all capacities. It typically is going to be different in a traditionally not blessed way. So you have to say, well, maybe I don't want to live like that anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe I want to let go of some of those things. And I think that letting go of some, like, maybe I want to I tell people, oh, you have to leave the marital home. Don't you want to redecorate? Don't
yes.
you want it to be like you now, not yes. you from whenever ago?
Yeah. Right? Living in all those old memories.
So what is the best platform for them to kind of find you on? We've been scrolling through some of your, or should they just reach out to you directly? Like, how does that work?
My Linktree is probably the easiest, because that gives you access to everything. If you okay. want to browse the website, browse any of the services, follow me on social, everything is on there.
Is a good, you know, like sometimes people, I think, don't always know how to go about just hiring one, you know, like you as a coach. Is it a good way to start just like with a group setting or something? Is that an easier way? Maybe
you are. Yeah. Or just hop on a clarity session with me where we can just chat one-on-one on Zoom and talk about what's going on and see if this is something that could help you. Because I certainly want you to get the right support. It's not going to do either of us any favors if what you're looking for is not what I can provide. But I also have a free private support group that you can join, and that can sometimes give you that insight as to what you need or what you're doing. Just talking to people who have been through it and who know, I think that's so important. Divorce can feel so isolating. And you know, your friends and your family, they might have advice, but it might not be the most productive advice or the best advice, even though they might have their heart's in the right place. But unless you've been through it, it's so hard to understand. And sometimes even if you've been through it, you could just be doing something that's so different. Every marriage is different. Every divorce is different. So I think it's just getting support if you feel stuck or unsure on what steps to move forward, or you feel like you're just caught up in your emotions and you don't know how to process it. Just getting support so that you don't stay stuck, because if you don't, I mean, that's something that could last decades. And that was something for me. I mean, I didn't do anything I was supposed to do after my first divorce. And that's how I wound up with the second one. So you want to make sure that you're doing the right things so that you can empower yourself and enjoy the rest of your life. I mean, divorce, yes, it's an ending of sorts, but it really is also a beginning. And it's a chance to have a fresh start so that you can create the life that you really want.
Mm-hmm. And you got to find someplace that resonates with you. So if the person, you know, typically this is going to be a person that you're going to talk to for a little bit of time, but obviously, you know, working with you, you can do one call, you can do like test the waters, things like that, because it's sort of like at the beginning, sometimes there's not a lot going on, right? You're just more anxious about it. And then as things ramp up, that's not really the time that you want to go and find and be like interviewing somebody who you want to hire. You kind of want to get that process going. So it's nice to know that they can have a process to reach out to you and kind of figure out where to go from there or take baby steps. Because I think that people don't understand the importance of the coach until it's like, I need them tomorrow. And that's not necessarily easy in this day and time. So I think do your research. You know, reach out, even if it's not you or me, you know, to reach out to somebody in your area that's going to give you some assistance. Yeah. So, but thank you, Leah. This is amazing. And
thank you for having me.
I think we should come back and talk about a little bit more of some of the traumas that we have to, because people don't want to talk about these, but I think one thing that you and I might know is like, once you heal from some of them, you can kind of talk to them about them a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So, you know, because we have a lot of, all of us, especially women, have a lot of consistencies that, you know, we can start to heal from. So I appreciate your contribution to the world, and we'll hope to see you again.
Thank you.